Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review on June 1st, 2015. Reading from the news section of the paper, an article titled MacArthur Eisenhower Send Their Students Forward. A picture of the Eisenhower class of 2015 stands during graduation ceremonies at the high school. From Decatur. Little disagreements can turn into huge confrontations if there are no cool heads around to prevail, and Jay Johnson won the Peacemaker Award for the courage to step in when her skill is needed. The award is given to a student who displays leadership and a positive example in the schools. Any time that there's an issue, I always try to mediate, Johnson said. I never shy away from confrontation because that's just ignoring the issue. And if you ignore an issue, it just gets bigger. Johnson is one of MacArthur High School's 2015 graduates, the first class to graduate in the newly renovated building. Beginning with this year's ceremony, graduation moved back to the buildings from the Decatur Civic Center, which had hosted the events since 2006. At first, the board had the ceremonies scheduled for 2 weeknights, but appeals from students and families to put the events on the weekend resulted in rescheduling MacArthur's graduation to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Eisenhower High School's at 7:30 p.m. A total of about 400 students graduated. The concern expressed by those who asked the board for the change was that out-of-town family wouldn't be able to come due to work schedules, and the staggered times allow those with ties to both high schools to attend both ceremonies. Originally, the hope was that MacArthur would reopen after the winter break, but construction delays kept them out until after spring break. District leaders were determined to get the senior class into the building in time for them to have memories of it and to graduate in it. It's a beautiful thing, said MacArthur graduate Keegan Thompson, who plans to study criminal justice at Richland Community College and hopes to be a police detective eventually. It's got our stars on the gym walls and our colors. It's not as big as the Civic Center, but it's nice. Johnson plans to attend Southern Illinois University to study business and communications. She's interested in working for a publishing company. One of the reasons for moving graduations to high school buildings was that the open and public Civic Center events had become unruly due to the noise and behavior of the audience, according to school officials. Each senior received a limited number of tickets this year, and latecomers were not admitted. The auditoriums were available for overflow, where the ceremony was streamed live. At Eisenhower, there were extra seats in the gym offered to the auditorium ticket holders if they wanted to make use of them, and most did. We wanted to have a classy and dignified graduation, Johnson said. The graduates won't care, no matter what, we're graduating. We're happy, whatever happens. MacArthur's summa cum laude speaker, Forrest Jacobson, quoted from Dr. Seuss's, "Oh, the places you'll go." And fellow summa cum laude speaker Maria Munoz spoke of growing up too fast and urged her classmates to experience as much as they can and to cherish the experiences along the way. We have come a long way, but our adventure is far from over, she said. Eisenhower summa cum laude speaker Sonny Welker said she was nervous about her speech, but she had worked on it extensively, both when the summa cum laude graduates competed for the honor of which of them would speak, and after she was chosen. She credited English teacher Ron Leiberger with helping her polish it. She plans to attend Greenville College first, and then medical school to become a pediatric orthopedic surgeon. She had her heart set on another school until she visited Greenville and discovered that they have cadavers available for undergrads and a 91% placement rate for medical school. I'll be really, really prepared, she said. Orator Trevitt Stout will attend Millikan University to study commercial music, and he, too, had other plans until a Millikan professor who saw him perform convinced him to visit and consider Millikan. A generous scholarship helped, too. I'm ready for this next step in my life, he said. Stout gave a lighthearted speech full of what he called a collage of quotes, including one from Muppet creator Jim Henson. Life's like a movie. Write your own ending. Keep believing. Keep pretending. The city court is to occupy council. From Decatur, after hearing 3 hours of comments at its last meeting, the Decatur City Council will weigh in on the city's administrative court and code enforcement policies tonight. In a memo to the council, City Manager Tim Gleason reiterated his plans for several measures he thought could improve the city's communication with property owners. They include a voluntary landlord registration, which would allow them to inform the city of their preferred method of contact. Gleason also wants to make the city inspector's database publicly accessible online, so property owners can check to see if there is an active case. Both potential tools were also part of Gleason's larger presentation May 18th, during which he gave detailed information about the court and code enforcement processes. Council members did not offer comments after the marathon study session, during which landlords, attorneys, and residents brought forward a spectrum of opinions. They are expected to discuss the issue tonight. The administrative court expanded in 2012 to help clean up neighborhoods and provide alternative consequences to what might otherwise be considered relatively minor misdemeanors. Most public comments at the meeting related to the handling of property and nuisance violations. Landlords, in particular, have complained for months that they are not given enough notice or time to fix violations before receiving a citation, which typically carries a $150 fine. In most cases, neighborhood inspectors send letters that give property owners 4 days from the date the letter is mailed to fix the problem. The letters are not required by city code and are considered a courtesy. Letters are not sent for weeds cases in which grass taller than 10 inches leads to an automatic citation. Violators also have just 72 hours to clean up extreme cases of trash and debris. With the inspector's database accessible online and the potential to email contact through the voluntary registration, landlords will be able to identify and fix problems sooner, potentially before a citation is issued, Gleason said. He hopes to roll out both additions within the next month. I like the courtesy notice. I do, he said. I also like the idea that somebody that uses this as a business keeps an eye on the property. I think all of the above is good for Decatur. Gleason said at the outset of the study session that he would not recommend any changes to city code governing the court. A majority of the council would have to vote to make changes to the code. Some aspects of the code enforcement system, such as the courtesy letter, are not outlined in city code. There's some areas where it just becomes my decision as the city manager, but obviously I will take city council members' comments into consideration, Gleason said. Why a 4-day notice as opposed to, say, 7 days? Gleason said that's about finding a balance between property owners who want time to fix problems and those who live next to them. I don't know that I have the best defense for 4 versus 7, nor do I think a landlord's that is wanting more time has a good defense to the adjacent property owners to justify 4 days versus zero, he said. You pick a date where you're trying to balance the victims, the neighbors who have to live next to this, and also trying to work with the landlords, that the overwhelming majority of whom are providing a service to the community that's very much needed. Gleason also said he plans to meet with the administrative court's hearing officers. I want them to hear from me that you have got discretion to do whatever the law allows you to do, and what I'm being told by legal staff is that's exactly what's in place now. I'm not assuming that I'm going to tell them anything that they aren't already doing, he said. Mayor Mike McElroy said Friday that he did not know what to expect from the rest of the council. I want to listen to what they have to say, he said. For his part, McElroy said he thought the study session went well, gave everyone an opportunity to be heard, and remained courteous throughout. They may not have liked what they heard, but they heard something. It wasn't like, we'll look that up. They didn't put people off. The manager or staff gave an answer to the majority of the questions that they had, McElroy said. The mayor said he supports both of Gleason's ideas and thought they could help improve the relationship between the city and some of the landlords who have offered concerns. An article by Teresa Churchill, a Herald and Review senior writer, is titled "More Seniors Showing Up at Food Pantries" from Decatur. Veronica Kurtzinger of Decatur must stretch her grocery dollar for a number of reasons. First, she lost her job in store management when Pride Cleaners and Launderers closed its location in Lincoln. Then she was diagnosed with a disabling heart condition and could no longer work. Finally, in 2011, Kurtzinger adopted two great-grandchildren and since then has had two more mouths to feed. So she relies on four food pantries, going to a different one each week to get through the month. "I am very, very thankful to be able to receive this blessing," she said. "It makes a big difference." Kurtzinger, 64, is one of an apparently growing number of older adults in Decatur seeking help to feed themselves and other members of their household. The Decatur Salvation Army's pantry, for example, saw 40 more people ages 60 and older during the first quarter of 2015 compared to the first quarter of 2014, 566 versus 526. Andrea Lewin, the food pantry's case manager, said she's serving more and more households, such as Kurtzinger's, with multiple generations living under one roof. "The cost of food is rising, along with household costs," Lewin said. "For a majority of those we are assisting, it is a very tough situation." The Northeast Community Fund and Catholic Charities are also seeing household counts increase, although Robin Murray, Community Services Supervisor at Catholic Charities, said the number of clients 65 or older is holding steady between 400 and 450 people per year. "The number of children we're feeding is definitely increasing," Murray said. "It's up about 6% over the past 2 years." Jerry Pels, executive director of the Northeast Community Fund, said he plans to start tracking the number of seniors using his food pantry for the month of June to get a basis for comparison and work with a nutritionist to develop supplemental food for them, perhaps something like the special food bags he's been giving to families with younger children than 18 since last fall. The Reverend Stacy Brohard, executive director of the Good Samaritan Inn, said he's seen the percentage of older adults in his dining room go from about 5% last summer to about 10% today. "Many of them are eating here to supplement their income because they're losing some of their benefits," Brohard said. "There's even been some conversation among the nonprofits about providing more supplemental meals to seniors." The Good Samaritan Inn and Northeast Community Fund are in the process of merging this year. Jerry Aldridge, food director for Northeast, said the pantry has identified 10 households with 10 people or more and have invited them to come in twice a month rather than once and choose 6 or 8 larger-sized cans of food in addition to the regular items they're getting on the food line. 3 of those families have more than 2 adults. Pels said medical expenses rise with advancing age, leaving fewer dollars to buy food. "Seniors don't have a lot of options for increasing their income, so they're constantly losing ground," he said. Willie Anderson Jr., 69, of Decatur, said he tries to avoid going to food pantries unless he needs something, but he's been feeling the need more often in the past 6 months. He said the $753 he gets every month from Social Security and Social Security disability isn't enough. "It never was enough, and right now I'm low on canned goods and peanut butter," Anderson said, while waiting his turn to go through the food line recently at Northeast Community Fund. "I'd have to eat beans and rice every day if it wasn't for this place." An article from Valerie Wells, a Herald and Review staff writer. Hope Academy adopts out plush animals to help Homeward Bound. From Decatur. The professional and friendly staff at the Hope Academy animal adoption event had all areas of the process well in hand. They had thoroughly researched each species and prepared a cage or habitat in keeping with that creature's needs. When animals had special needs, such as Rainbow the Unicorn, who eats only rainbows, Glitter and the occasional rainbow-colored donut, or the bears who were mother and child and had to be adopted together, the staff made certain that those creatures went to a home capable of handling those needs. We give out applications and tell them to fill them out, and then somebody will come and take you back there where the animals are, said Katya Tolliver, one of two greeters at the front desk. Those applications were thorough. Potential pet owners had to say whether they wanted a fish, bird, mammal, or amphibian, describe where the pet would live, and promise to provide love, medical care, food, and water for their new friend, and never hurt their pet. Fifth grade teacher Marisha Branson said the idea for the adoption fair was a group effort, and she went out and collected a variety of plush animals to be adopted for a minimum of $1 each, though larger donations were welcome. The students came up with jobs for themselves, including security guards who helped transport the pets out to their new family's cars, a groomer who cleaned them up and brushed them so they'd go home in the best condition, and a vet who checked them over and gave them up-to-date vaccinations. And then there was their public relations agent, Ray Lene James, who took potential adopters on a guided tour of the adoption area and pointed out that each animal had a name, age, and history attached, including their usual diet. The money raised will go to Homeward Bound to help support real animals and pay for food, bedding, and medical care while they wait for their forever homes. Homeward Bound operates solely on donations, and every penny counts. If any animals are left on Friday, the adoption center will be open during school hours, Branson said. I think it's absolutely great, said Linda Clary of Homeward Bound, who dropped by to see the project. They used a lot of imagination to come up with the different kinds of enclosures for them. They assigned jobs to everybody. They've all worked together as a team, which is what it takes, and I love it. I really appreciate the awareness this brings to these young people to the fact that there are animals in need out there, and there are ways to get them into good homes. And now an article written by Tony Reed from the Herald and Review staff. Record player jukebox revival starts in Brownstown. There's a picture, a photograph of Scott Bingaman, the Deer Park Distributors president, who offers products such as the Crossley Rocket Jukebox. He's standing next to a colorful old retro jukebox. From Brownstown, what goes around comes around. It's a music nostalgia business model that has proved to be the food of love for Deer Park Distributors LLC, which is doing very nicely, feeding retail outlets with vinyl record players, retro-looking radios, and even jukeboxes from its unique headquarters in Brownstown. You might expect a company plugged into the latest hot trends in music to be based somewhere more frenetic, such as Los Angeles or maybe Nashville. But the quiet Fayette County burg of Brownstown is where company founder Fred Bingaman grew up and where he retired back to. Bingaman is a passionate collector of vintage jukeboxes and anything related to the rock and roll diner era when grease covered the hair as well as the fries. As his collection grew and attracted attention, he made lots of friends and contacts in the world of yesteryear music gear. Bingaman heard the sounds of a business overture and founded Deer Park in 2001. It's called Deer Park because the first 50 by 50 foot shed he had for merchandise storage was based in his spacious backyard, a haven for deer. People like your banker sometimes think nostalgia is not a good investment, said Bingaman, 74, but it is, and it's grown tremendously. Deer Park has become the exclusive U.S. distributor for electronic goods from Crossley, an American company that started building radios in the 1920s. Everything they make still has a retro feel, with radios that have modern innards but are wood-cased and look like they date from the 1930s. And then there are the Crossley record players. There are small ones that open out of their own neat suitcase-style bodies that have a strong 50s and 60s look, but their modern guts allow connections to a computer, and they're fully armed with software suites for ripping and editing audio content whenever you want. Some more upmarket models feature a 3-speed record turntable along with a CD player recorder, an AM/FM radio, remote control, and even a cassette player for anybody who can remember what a cassette is. And yet the most surprising resurgence is that of vinyl records, the kind you play with a needle running in tiny grooves that seem as relevant to the 21st century as buggy whips. But Scott Bingaman, Fred's son and the company president, said there are plenty of die-hard ears out there that never lost the love for vinyl. Many of them belong to sophisticated music lovers, described by Bingaman as audiophiles, who still rate the recorded record sound as the most real and authentic. Yet other categories of vinyl buyers are nostalgia junkies keen for an audio tactile fix that will take them back to their high school days, or that memorable prom and or first romance. Bingaman says it's the musical comfort food of yesterday when the customer's world was young. The records feeding all these needs and being played on the new record players aren't just coming from the yard sales and fringe music shops. New vinyl records are being pressed as fast as factories can stamp them out, and fresh generations who grew up thinking records applied only to sports achievements are also discovering that grooved plastic can be, well, groovy. Oh, vinyl records are huge, says Scott Bingaman, 46, and the resurrection and the resurgence in vinyl is the fastest growing segment of all media right now. Something like 15 million units were sold last year for vinyl. There are older people who want to rediscover their music, and young kids discovering it for the first time. We now have 13-year-olds buying and collecting vinyl records. Timing in music, as in life, is everything, and Deer Park got going just as this vinyl phenomenon was getting on track, and the two have been on a steady roll together. Deer Park now employs a staff of 20 full and part-time workers and ships all over the world. The only continents we haven't shipped to are Antarctica and Africa, Bingaman says. Deer Park is way more than a distributor, however. Bingaman skips all over the planet, sourcing new products, and recently returned from England, where he checked out production facilities for a new top-of-the-line jukebox model. Its looks have a chrome 50s vibe, but the jukebox gives a nod to more modern convenience and plays CDs rather than records. And yet its splendidly complicated operating mechanism picks up those CDs and drops them into place with the same fascinating mechanical ballet familiar to anyone who has seen an original jukebox operate. Chris Hsu, Deer Park's lead jukebox technician, has flown with the boss to England to inspect the machine and came back impressed. "I love it," he says, "and it's actually manufactured from a 1955 jukebox after they took the original apart to copy it. It's very well built." Hsu proceeds to demonstrate one, all multicolored lights and whirring machinery, and explains it will connect with the Bluetooth on your phone. He cranks up the volume, and suddenly the cars are blasting Deer Park's cavernous warehouse space and inviting us all to let the good times roll. Scott Bingaman says his baby will retail for about $8,000 and asks, who can splash around that kind of money? He answers without hesitation, rich guys. For other customers heavily laden with nostalgia but lighter on the wallet department, Deer Park via Crossley has got them covered with a range of jukeboxes that look like refugees from the set of Grease, but sell for a much more modest $1,500. Bingaman then walks on briskly to complete a tour of the full Deer Park Crossley range, which includes yet more jukebox models, record players in all shapes and sizes, radios, and related goodies. The product line even runs to nostalgic telephones that include a 1950s-era payphone and a country wall phone model made of wood with a crank handle. Retro, says Bingaman reassuringly. It's always been back in style. And now an article titled, ADM's Worts Among Highest Paid Women CEOs. Female CEOs are outpacing their male colleagues in pay, although they remain vastly outnumbered in the top echelons of American companies. Last year, the median pay for women CEOs rose to $15.9 million, a 21% gain from a year earlier, according to a study by executive compensation data firm Equilar and the Associated Press. Marissa Mayer, the head of Yahoo, was the highest paid female executive in the study. Her compensation was almost double that of the next highest earner on the list, Carol Meyerowitz of discount retailer TJX Company. Still, there is a big caveat. There are far fewer female CEOs than males among larger U.S. companies. The study of 340 CEOs included only 13 women. On the list of the top 15 include number 8, Patricia Wirtz of Archer Daniels Midland, who receives $16.3 million, up 138%. Wirtz's near 9-year tenure as CEO of Archer Daniels Midland ended in December, though she still holds the position of chairman at the company, which makes vegetable oil, ethanol, and ingredients used in packaged foods and drinks. Her compensation included $501,560 for relocation expenses after ADM moved its global headquarters to Chicago from Decatur. And finally, Decatur women disagree over gas money. Their disagreement comes to blows and a suspect is sought. From Decatur. An argument over gas money led to one Decatur woman beating another, according to police reports. The two had been out drinking together and got into an argument about 11:40 p.m. Saturday in the 37-year-old victim's home in the 1600 block of Home Park Avenue. The victim told police she had been punched repeatedly in the head and face, and patrol officers noted she had bruising and minor cuts. Her assailant was being sought on a charge of aggravated battery. We will now take a short break and return with the second half hour of the June 1st, 2015 Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.